How to Become, with thanks to Lear Business Services and Training Centre Mullingar, offering QQI certified online courses in key areas such as business administration, management, train the trainer, personal development and bespoke in-company training. LearBusinessCentre.com.
Hello. And welcome to Midlands 103, Loose Cannons, How to Become A. And this is myself, Mary Sherwin, with...
Carl Spain, comedian.
Comedian extraordinaire.
Oh yes, that's right. I'll take that.
So Carl, tell us, how did you become a comedian?
It was something I wanted to do from the age of, I'd say, 18. I saw Billy Connolly in Limerick.
Okay.
And I thought... like a vocation, like a calling. I went, that's what I meant to do.
Okay.
And I said it to my then girlfriend, I want to do that. But to me, that was like seeing Jimi Hendrix play live on the guitar and going, do you know what? I might buy a guitar and do that. And she's like, no, you're not going to do that. But it wasn't quite that. I wouldn't think I was going to be Billy Connolly or whatever. And even I started getting interested in comedy then, and I never went to comedy gigs.
Okay.
I went to see Billy Connolly. I saw Sean Hughes two or three times, and I once accidentally went into a club when I was in college, and I kind of went, oh, this is comedy now, this is the standard, it's just a local club.
Okay.
And the headliner came on, I went, right, this is the guy I have to be as good as. It's not Billy Connolly, it's not Sean Hughes, they were theatres, and the guy headlining was so good. I think genuinely knocked me back about two or three years. I remember his name. I don't know where he is now, but Tommy Tiernan was his name. And it was genuine. I saw Tommy and went, oh God, that's, you have to be that good to do it. And then a girl I was living with, her friend was staying with us, and she did stand up. And I went to see her, and she wasn't great, and the standard wasn't great. And I went, oh, I could do this. It was more because the bar had been dropped. I thought, oh, I could do this. And I entered an open mic night, and they hadn't room to put me on, but I stayed and watched everyone, and everyone was pretty rubbish. And I went back the following week, and on my first gig, I won the audience votes, who's the best. And it wasn't that. Like, I look back now, for a new act, because I was 28 then, it took me 10 years to get to this point.
Okay.
To walk on stage.
Right.
From deciding to walk on stage to walking on stage took me 10 years.
What took you that long? Because clearly when you were younger, you knew.
I'm incredibly shy.
Okay.
And the people, it's buried now, but in the old days, like, I could meet someone, I could barely speak.
Okay.
Shy in certain company. Very shy. And I talk, you know, read articles or hear interviews of other comedians and actors, lead singers of bands, and they all kind of say the same thing. Mm. Incredibly shy, and no one believes. And I go, yeah, that's me. I was like that.
And do you kind of, like Beyonce has Sasha Fierce, like, do you have another alternative persona?
I thought of doing that. Now, it was before Beyonce was around, but I thought of doing it as a character, doing comedy as a character. And eventually I did, but I was going about 3 years, and then I did a character act as well called Fitzy, who was kind of like a dodgy Limerick scumbag. And it would be stuff like, I kind of gone across tingling, playing football, but she went off, made herself pregnant. So I could have done it. If it wasn't for her and maybe the glue, I could have gone to England and played football. And I got into a fight with a guy. He kind of hit my knee and then caught my boot a couple of times. Of course, I get banned. When he's out of hospital, he'd be straight back refereeing. So there were all jokes like that. There was all very much gags rather than a proper characterization.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I did that for a while as well in a parallel. So I sometimes do the two in the one night.
Okay.
So if no support act, I'd go on as Fitzy and then come on as me.
Okay.
And it was rare that they both worked. So if I did really well as Fitzy, Carl Spain struggled, as I talk about myself in the second person. But it's a character I've thought of coming back, but I haven't done it in years now. I've thought of coming back and doing other characters. But I think it's a nice, for someone new, it's a nice way of doing it because it's a little bit of armour on you. And it's not me being rejected. It's Fitzy or it's whatever character.
What are the pros and cons? Like, what's the best thing about being a stand-up?
The release when you've done the gig. When I started, like, because of, I'd say I was shy, but because of, I wouldn't say nerves, like, I would have been nervous, but I wouldn't have been quite as visible. But I would wake up the morning, like, in that first 6 months anyway, maybe longer, I'd wake up with a dread. It's like I never flicked that switch at home. That means the house is going to blow up and everyone's going to die. It was that sense of dread and I can't do anything about it. Okay. But then when you finish the gig, the actual release and joy was, it was proper euphoric. Especially if it went well. If it went well, amazing. And like I remember my first joke on stage, I got a laugh and it genuinely threw me so much. And I find it bizarre that I just hadn't considered getting a laugh as a possibility. The first joke was, this is April 2000. So the first joke was, Limerick has a bad reputation, but it's just a handful of people. What they do gets in the news, on the TV, on the radio, and you judge us all by them. We're not all like the Cranberries, right? And at the time, the Cranberries, who I'm a big fan of, were seen as a bit naff and a bit this. So they used to get, you know, slagging them was kind of an easy, and you're punching up rather than punching down. And I got a huge laugh. And it genuinely knocked me back so much. And I used to have a whole routine about their songs. Never did it, ever. Never went back to it. And I got my first heckle. There was a girl I know says, "Oh, come on, Carl, you have to let it linger." I remember looking at her, I wanted to kill her. I was like, "Oh my God." And my best friend Mary was down the mat going, "Oh my God, he's dying, he's dying, he's dying." And I could hear her because I just paused after the laughter.
It was a good heckle though, in fairness.
Oh, perfect. Like, I'm only going, I'm literally going, I'm 30 seconds into my career, Trish.
And that was a home crowd, which obviously is a tough crowd.
I think when you're new, if it's done properly by the MC, that was a new act night. And sometimes it's best going on if three or four people have been horrible. Okay. Just died. Just they've been terrible. And you go on and you tell them something funny. The audience love you so much more. Okay. So when I started, I was voted best act the first three nights I went there. And I thought, oh, I have this nailed. I'm starting to make contacts. And people are going, oh, you're actually good. You could do more of this. And I was thinking, oh, yeah. So the fourth night, I think I went and I just tried to write new material. I dropped all the stuff. I was like, I'm literally three shows in and tried new stuff. And I hadn't it right in my head. So I was just saying sentences and I was leaving out the important information where the punchline would be, like really bad errors. And I remember someone in the front going, "I can smell gas. Do you smell gas?" And it wasn't a heckle, but I just remember someone, I was like, "Oh my God, the building's going to blow up. I'm going to die twice tonight. This is going to be horrendous." But once I got, I don't know how many years in now, think back, but there was a point when I wouldn't say completely fearless, but it doesn't bother me in the slightest. Someone just tipped me on the shoulder and walked me and said, "There's a room here with 300 people waiting. I could walk in there and do a gig." I had no prep, just walk out on the stage. In a way that's bad. I prefer a little bit more edge on me, but okay. Yeah.
You're just so relaxed.
Yeah, very much now.
Do people expect you to be funny all the time? I suppose, you know, that would be something that I'd be thinking.
There is a little bit of that, but I am not funny all the time, but I do, I find it hard to switch off. Like I'll go into a cafe and they'll go, "Okay, sit wherever you like." And I'll go, "Okay, can you move those people? Because I want to sit there." And they're like, "Oh no, I just meant the available seats. But that's where I'd like to sit." And just, you know, it has to be a third person there who laugh. But I'll do that. Or I'll say something to embarrass my friend in front of a stranger and the person will laugh. You know, so I can't switch it off. But it's not like total performance. I think it would have been more like that before I did comedy.
Okay.
That I was a bit more full on because I'd nowhere to platform my wonderful talent. Do you know, you've nowhere to go and perform.
Yeah.
I was obviously now looking back, I was a frustrated performer, wanted to do something. And my calling for stand-up was, you know, not being answered for 10 years.
Yeah. So just even looking at the progression, so you're saying that it took you 10 years before you actually got on the stage because at that time you had been shy. So then what happened? How did you, because I know you write for other people as well. So how has this all developed for you?
Well, the writing was a lot later. So I was told, like, I actually have the video of my second gig. And at the end of me, they voted me the winner. So that's been filmed. And it goes, "Oh, the RT New Comedy Awards, if you want to sign up." And I entered that and won it in 2000.
Brilliant.
And I also entered So You Think You're Funny in Edinburgh, which is a Channel 4 connected. And I was beaten in the semi-final by a guy called Russell Brand.
Oh.
I got him back this year.
I bet you did.
Took me ages to get him back. But and he was the best on the night. There was the other people that were there going, oh, I didn't think so. I went, not a, for me, it wasn't even a contest. I said it to him. That's the only time I've ever met him. I said it to him. I said, between you and me, I think you're going to win. He was pretty good. But then I just started getting paid because I was good, you know, and it, just because I could do it. Mm. There's always loads of people trying and just saying, oh, I'm a comedian. And they're just not very good because people go, oh, that guy's actually good, that guy from Limerick. So a few, like Jerry Mallon, who's a promoter in Galway, rang me, got my number. He saw me on the TV in the RTE thing and booked me for a gig. Wow. Like a lot of the time you'd have to go up and do an open spot. So he booked me for a gig and we're still friends now. I did a gig for him only last week again. So, you know, I know him 24 years now. But there was a bit of that. And once you get paid, you meet the other comedians, they'll recommend a gig and blah, blah, blah. And it just builds from that.
So is it a bit of a network then, you know, that you will or that you will be asked to support somebody or vice versa?
Yeah, it's a tiny village and you move into that village when you do comedy and everyone knows you fairly soon. Okay. That's the, and it is that way, you know, and you meet... It's funny, I remember meeting, like Des Bishop would have been a great help to me at the start and as a mentor, even though I think I'm older than Des by a few years. But it's in comedy years, I'm not, you know. So Des would have been a great help. But then you meet Des and you go, oh, you know each other. And you're kind of like, of course they know each other. They're going a couple of years. Yeah. So then you get to, you just gradually get to meet people. And I remember most of them I met first time. Oh, God, he's been on TV and stuff like that. And now it's, you know, it's so blasé. But you try and, you know, you just move up along and do your thing. Mm.
And is there anybody that you would get starstruck, you know, if you met them?
I don't know now. I honestly don't think it would be a comedian now. I've met so many, you know, proper famous comedians and even some of the ones, someone goes, oh, my God, have you seen this guy? This American guy, he's amazing. And I watch him and I go, yeah, it's all right. You know, it's good. I'm not trying to, you know, they're good, but I wouldn't be blown away by it. Mm. Whereas, I think Kevin Bridges is the best, but I've known Kevin since he started.
Okay.
So it's not, I'm not going to be, oh my God, it's Kevin Bridges. Do you know, John Bishop was over in Galway in October. And again, I knew John when he started. He was still working full time and doing comedy part-time. Yeah. And you just be, you know, but it's that thing of, you know, the new comics, so it's like, oh my God, you knew it. Yeah, because I'm around 24 years. Yeah. It's the, you know, in 20-odd years, you'll know someone that we know now, we're looking at going, God, there's nothing there, or there mightn't be much there. Yeah. And you're thinking, like, 5 years ago, I don't think people were seeing Joanne McAnally as the biggest Irish comedy star. Mm. No, Joanne was good, and you could see she was going to make her career out of it. Mm. But she's gone into the stratosphere. I think her show is probably the biggest selling comedy show of all time in Ireland.
Wow.
You know, for an individual show, the Prosecco Express, I don't think Tommy's had a show that sold as much. I might be wrong in that, but I don't think so. Like 75 Vicar Streets and whatever else she's done. Okay. She did whatever other arena in Dublin. So, I mean, that's great. And I know Joanne. I remember someone coming up to me and saying about to Joanne, oh, we're trying to persuade her to do stand-up. Will you have a word? And I was saying, oh, if you're any good as a woman, you'll fly through it. Don't, you know. And she was like, I don't know. And I said, oh, give it a go. And it was others were trying to persuade her.
Yeah.
They just dragged me in. So that's, oh, God, about 10 years ago that was now. Can I invest in you?
How to Become. With thanks to Port Arlington Further Education and Training Centre. Learn about our full and part-time further education and training courses and our third level and higher education undergraduate and postgraduate courses. PortArlingtonFETC.ie.
Something that kind of struck me about the amount of time that you have to take to write. Like, does it come really quickly to you? Do you have to think about it? Or would there be somebody you bounce it off, your girlfriend or whatever? Or?
She's been the one that's been funny this week. She keeps laughing. She got like a couple of zingers, like what I call them, where she'd be slagging me and I'm going, that's another zinger. She goes, it is, isn't it? Write down my zingers. But it can come out of anything, you know. Some happened in my life, like before we spoke, we were talking about other comedy shows. I was in a sauna in Austria in April and I had to go in. I had a massage in the hotel and this Austrian woman says, for shower, sauna. But you have to be fully naked in the shower. So I walked in there and between everything else that happened, I have a 15-minute routine about being in the shower in walking around, and all the other people that were naked, and mainly British and Irish, and a few Austrians or whatever. But yeah, I have a routine. So something that happened, and it's pretty much all true, the story that I tell. There isn't actually anything I think the whole story is true. So it's something like that that happened. It doesn't mean I hang around where there's naked people now just to get material. But you, a thing can happen. I remember Ed Byrne told me a story. I toured with Ed Byrne years ago, and he had this thing about how much it annoyed him when he'd be using his debit card. And it was before you could tap. So it's like you put in the card there and just put in the number. And he'd be like, I know. But then he did material about it. And every time they'd go, you put in the card and put in your number. And he'd go, I'll have a bit on that. And in that way, comedy is therapeutic in something annoys you. Mm-hmm. And then you write a good routine or jokes about it. And you're suddenly going, oh, I actually have a bit now on that. That's all right. So they're almost giving you a positive memory from a negative for something that annoys you. I like that element to it. But the material can come from anywhere. When I write for other people, I would tell them, give us your story and we'll make it funny. So give us what information you can give us. I'm actually writing with three different people at the moment for different shows. And my worry is I'd give the same joke to two of them. I go, remember I said that joke? And they go, no. And then I tell them the joke and then realise a week later, oh, no, I gave that joke. And then I have to go take it back from one of them. Or, no, I don't think that works for you. And they go, no, it does. It does. But it can be a thing of, so if there's the guts of a story, oh, I did this, I did that, I did whatever. And I'll see jokes in it. Oh, you could say this. I go, oh, yeah, I never thought of that. And that's where I find that easy. I find that easy now after 20 odd years.
I just wanted to know, because I'm really curious, what makes you laugh? Like, and TV shows or comedians, like who, I know you mentioned a few already, but would you, like Billy Connolly obviously was a big one.
Yeah. When I saw Billy Connolly that night when I was 18 or whatever, I never laughed as much in my life before or since. Genuinely blew me away how, and like, I pains in my face from laughing that I never felt again. Didn't know that pain could happen in my cheeks from just laughing so much. But someone like Sean Locke, I used to love Sean Locke. There was such a devilment in him, and he was so funny. There was actually a night at the Galway Comedy Festival when Sean Locke, Glenn Wool, Kevin Bridges were going back to one of their hotel rooms to have drink. They weren't allowed drink late in the hotel, so they were going to one of their rooms, and there was a young Irish comic with them who was buckled, like couldn't speak. And the four of them ended up, and I came out, I heard their voices and says, come on. So I went into the room. I had no shoes and socks on me because I was getting into bed. But I went into the room and we're chatting, and the guy who was buckled got up to go to the bathroom. But he was sitting on the bed, got up to go to the bathroom and just walked into the wall and fell back on the bed. And I can't remember, was it Sean or Kevin? But whichever one went, oh, there's a door, mate. You're going to have to walk through the wall. And it genuinely made me, we all laughed.
Yeah.
I was completely sober. They were all hammered, but it made me laugh. I still laugh when I think about it.
Yeah.
Just the simple, there's actually a door. Yeah. And it was just silly, a silly thing. And it's like that to me is, you know, when I started, I thought, hanging out with comedians, it'll be like that the whole time. And my God, is it not? But when it is, it's heaven. You know, you're with great comedians and it's just, we're not trying to impress each other.
Yeah.
Just funny people, you know.
So is there, do you think, a darker side, or is there a downside to it?
I think there is, but I think there's that in life. I mean, I think it's more open now. There is, of course, because I think as a comedian, you can function as an alcoholic, as a drug addict. You just have to be together for an hour or so at night. And even when you're not fully together, it can be funny in its own way. You're not necessarily playing guitar or singing, you know, you can just, I can do this and go for drinks afterwards.
Yeah.
I took a break because I realised that. I said, oh, when my night's out and my night's off, I'd like to be out. And when I was working, I was in a place for service drink. So it's over 20 years ago, I realised, God, I think I've had a drink 8 or 9 days in a row. So I'll just take a break and make sure it's okay. And I rarely drink now.
Okay.
2022, I had a couple of, like I had a few drinks throughout the year. But like, I probably would have got drunk if you add up all the drinks together
once.
But there's not. You know, I don't drink now, really. And a lot of comics don't. It's surprisingly how many don't. Because it's a it's an easy trap to fall into that you can go, should you have to get up tomorrow? You know, well, yeah, but sometimes you're going, yeah, you do. You have to get up at 5:30 to catch a flight to the next gig. And that's when you go, oh, God, can we not stay up all night?
So, Carl, what tips would you give to somebody starting out now?
So the first thing to, if you decide in the morning, I want to do this, is find a comedy club close to you, contact them and say you want to do an open spot. Don't lie about your experience. You know, don't be saying, oh, I'm brilliant. You should book me. Tell them you're new. They'll give you a shout because they'll hope that you'll bring 10 or 15 mates who want to see you fall on your face. But for writing material, write about who you are and what you do and your life experience. If you can't make that funny, there's no point taking on Ryanair, Donald Trump, like the classic bits of material, because your jokes won't be original or better than what's been done on those subjects already. But no one's writing jokes about you. So I talk about who you are, your life experience. And it's, you know, trying to surprise, you'll surprise yourself sometimes with the where the punchlines are. If you just want to write gags, a trick, and I've said this to people, I actually think it's a clever, quite proud of myself with this suggestion. If you're writing just gags, go on YouTube, find a comedian you've never heard of, press play, and when they do the setup for a joke, hit pause and try and finish the joke yourself. So guy walks into a bar and he's got whatever, I don't know, a vegetable under his arm, big cabbage under each arm. I don't have an ending to that joke, but if that's, and you go, right, well, walk around the room, right, the cabbages, why is it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then once you've come up with a joke yourself, listen to the end. If yours is similar to the joke, you're thinking like a comedian. If it's different, you have a new joke. So it's now, if you go watch, oh, Jimmy Carr, and go, oh, I've seen this before, you're going to start guessing, you're just going to remember the answer. But find a comedian you've never heard of. There's probably millions of them out there. And they don't have to be the best joke, but as an exercise. You know, there's old, I don't know, I remember watching them. They're probably on YouTube in the 1980s, see these American club comics, and some of them were terrible. But, you know, you'd see jokes and you go, God, and you go, oh, but that's, it's a way of teaching yourself to write jokes and think like a comedian. But write about yourself. I think that's the key thing. Where you're from, you get your own unique perspective on the world, talk about your life experience, things you've seen and done. And I find that as a comedian, even now, the stuff I'd look back on and go, God, I never thought about that. Or I'd see another comedian talk about something, go, God, I have a story about the time I was in Mexico and, oh, never been to Mexico, I don't know why I said that. But, oh, but the time I was there, and, oh, yeah, I could tell that story. Or, oh, the funny thing happened, oh, when I asked that girl out, and I once ended up on a date with a girl and her boyfriend.
What?
Yeah, it's too long a story to tell now, but I know people are hooked. I'd been messaging her back and forth and then arranged to meet her, just the two of us. We're sitting in the pub and she's just that bit odd for the first time. I've been texting her for 6 weeks back and forth. She would start most of the conversations. And then she goes, just chatting to me, and you were in Australia last year doing gig. And I was like, this has turned into an interview. No, but, and then she goes, yeah, because me and my boyfriend. And I went, I remember my face, oh God, don't let it show, but it probably did. And he says, how does he feel about me and you here? He says, he's fine, he's in the other part of the pub. So she went and got him, and the three of us sat there. And I'm like going, I left my house today on a date. And now I'm sitting with a couple. And I was terrified one of my friends was going to come in. She said, I might drop in to have a look at her. And I was like, if she walks through the door, I'm just going to have to lift her and run out the road with her, because she'll mortify me. But that's, I haven't told that story properly on stage yet, but I probably will. It's probably still too raw. I once led the Gay Pride March in Dublin by mistake. I was walking into town and the Gay Pride March started behind me. And I'm looking back and going, what's this? And it was the Gay Pride. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And then I'm walking down.
And then he can't leave.
No, I didn't want to run. Like, he literally would have been running away. There's nowhere to go for the first few minutes. And then I looked on O'Connell Street and the news crews and the photographers were there taking pictures and filming it. And I went, oh my God, I could be on the news leading the Gay Pride. And I rang my friends, I rang one of the girls and just said, just in case. And she did. I was so proud of her afterwards when I thought of it. And she goes, it's okay, Carl. We've always known you were gay. And I went, no, I'm not gay. She goes, it's okay. And I was like, I was laughing. I turned around, when I got around the corner, I was sitting down roaring laughing. at, oh my God, that's so funny.
Is there anything else that you'd say to them? So, you know, you gave some really good tips. It sounds like, though, is there a way of writing a joke?
But I've friends that don't do stand-up that are funny. And they'll tell a story or they'll write a letter or an email and you're roaring laughing because they have that natural turn of phrase, that natural reveal of the humour. And if you have that, people who have that, or you tell a story, or, you know, if you're with a group of friends and you're the one, when you start telling the story, everyone stops and listens because they know this is going to be good, you know. And I genuinely think I encourage them to write, you know, write a book, write something, write jokes for me, but tell some of your stories. But yeah, but people's travel stories and different things and seeing things, there's material out there. It's just the more experience you have about writing jokes and performing jokes, you'll spot it quicker. Then you go, oh God, this could be a bit now, talking to this person or this happening. I've had it with radio interviews where once I did one over the phone and the guy go, Carl Spain. And I went bang, and I was into it like a 3-minute bit, and he's roaring laughing. I went, I'm literally going, this is the best radio interview I've ever done. I'm hammering him, and he goes, Carl, 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 Carl. Oh my God, you're so funny. Anyway, hold on there a second. We're going to go live now. And I just remember being, oh my God, I thought we were live. And it just, all the energy just, So I was like, oh, Carl, you're telling us they're up in Dublin. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll never have you back again.
I just couldn't do it again because it's the same audience who's just heard the joke and their laugh won't be genuine. I just went, oh, God.
And do you have a book that you write it down into?
Never, I should.
Really?
I put stuff in the phone sometimes, but I'll forget. Okay. Like, I'll take it out now and I'll go, oh, God, yeah. Like, I have a joke. I'm 52 now, so when I say I got lucky last night, that just probably means I got Wordle and Tree. And to me, that's true, but it's a joke that has no place. There's nothing to come before it or after it. So at the moment, I forget that joke more than anything. It's just a simple one-liner, bang, and people do Wordle. They go, oh, that's funny how you do Wordle as well. Yeah. But it's nowhere to go. So I have to save that. I have a few jokes like that, that until it becomes part of a bigger routine or leads me into some other story, it's not going to be there. That's how you build a routine. So you'll have a joke like, whatever, a simple one-liner, and you build back or forward from it. Occasionally in England, I'll go, if there's a football tournament on, I think last summer 22, the English women won the Euros. And I was saying, oh, well, England's such a great football country. You've invented the game. It's just a shame you never won the European Championship. Men's team never won it, or the World Cup. And a man goes, 66, mate. I went, oh, God, yeah, sorry. You should remind us more often. We're going to forget. And of course, he walks straight into it. But more often than not, they won't. But that night, it was perfect. He literally, and you could hear the rest of the room going, you idiot. Did you not see what he was doing? He literally walked you in.
Yeah,
you know, it's like when you're a kid. Hey, did you ever do this? And you're like, ah, you squeeze my hand, stop it. Or, you know, you do something stupid. But yeah, it was. So it's a perfect one with that. Or you go, just never won a World Cup. Someone will say it.
Yeah.
Someone will bite and you just know. And they're going, ah, oh. Yeah. But there are little devices, but that comes with experience. The worst thing, not the worst thing, but the one I always find funny with comedy is when you do a joke or when you have a gig that's not working, that most comedians will have 5 or 6 lines about the show not working that get laughs. You know, oh, I didn't realise I looked like whatever, you know, that make them laugh. There's that thing of punching up and punching down. So if you're attacking, you know, prime ministers or, you know, royalty, you're punching up and people go, well, sure, they're in the position of power ultimately. The whole offence thing in comedy is, it's a curious one. Like, you know, it says, I'm offended. Okay. Everyone else doesn't care. And sometimes people miss the point of what's been said. That's happened with me where people, why'd you say that? I went, no, you've missed the point. And the rest of the room go, no, it's fine. We know what's going on. But it's never my intention to offend anyone. I would never, you know, I don't see the point in that. If you go out and go, oh, look at me, I'm so clever, but I've pissed you all off, you know.